So I will talk about some work that is related to this question. The presentation is divided in two parts. The first part is work I did during my PhD. The second part is work in progress. And they contribute to this question. So let me first motivate this question with a brief introduction. In quantum theory, we have the no-signaling principle, which states that for a pair of communicating parties, Alice and Bob, there is no way in which Bob can learn Alice measurement choices if there is no transmitted system to Bob independently of any arbitrary quantum entangled state that they share. In other words, Bob cannot learn any information at Alice's location if he doesn't receive a physical system. So, communication of information requires transmission of a physical system. And so it is interesting to ask how much information can a transmitted physical system fundamentally communicate. I will present some results in this direction that are important and particularly relevant for the purpose of this talk. So first we have the Holevo bound in quantum theory, which says that there is a bound on the classical information that can be communicated by transmission of a quantum system. This scenario considers that Alice and Bob do not share a previous entanglement. We have then quantum superdense coding, in which the communicating parties share some quantum entangled state. The transmitted system is quantum, and the communicated information is classical. Information causality considers this scenario in a more general framework of theories, generalized probabilistic theories. These are theories that include classical and quantum theory as special cases. And so, in this scenario, Alice and Bob share some entangled state within these theories. These are no signaling. The transmitted system is classical, corresponding to n bits. The communicated information is classical, corresponding to a data of n bits. So information causality states that the mutual information between the input bits and the transmitted bits with the initial system at Bob's location is upper bounded by the number of transmitted bits. Here, this is a more general type of mutual information. So defined within generalized probabilistic theories. Well, not defined really, but consider to be for these theories. And importantly, by stating this principle, it was shown that the quantum zero-sum bound follows. So that's an important result from information causality. Now, this is some work I did during my PhD, and it corresponds to the first part of the talk. Here we restrict to quantum theory, so we don't consider more general probabilistic theories, only quantum theory. And within quantum theory, the communicating parties share the most general type of resources. This is an arbitrary quantum entangled state. The transmitted system is the most general type of system within quantum theory, a quantum system, arbitrarily entangled with these resources. And the communicated information is the most general type of information within quantum theory. It's quantum information.
Can you go back to the previous slide? This result is the result in general probabilistic theories, or it's a result, a classical result?
It's a result considering the framework of generalized probabilistic theories, but classical in the sense, well, the classical quantity here is the transmitted system and the communicated information. Yes, imposing information causality, the Tiersons bound follows. Yep.
So classical means you have a definition for classical in this framework?
For classical information, you mean?
Yeah.
We just, well, your bits, n bits.
No, I know, but
what is the question?
The classical system?
The classical system, again, these are just bits.
No, but you have a more general framework.
Mm-hmm. Sharing an arbitrary non-sitting resource, so that thing may not be classical. You're sharing between two sites.
I see, that doesn't have to be classical. But you share it, but the thing that you transmit is classical.
Yes.
So I'm just asking, what is the definition of classical system in this more general framework? Maybe it's well known, mm-hmm. but I...
Yes. Well, a classical system is... is a system in which...
Does it mean you have a simplex for all the state space or something? Is that what it means, the state space is a simplex?
Yeah, the state space is such that the probability outcomes, we have a single probability distribution. So, all possible measurements give a... you can apply any measurement and learn the value of your state. So yeah, it's like we have states that are, the pure states are perfectly distinguishable by a single measurement. So we don't have that in quantum theory and more general theories. Yeah, that would be the definition.
So the definition is that the pure states are distinguishable by a single measurement.
Yes. I would say it was a way to see it. Yeah. Okay, may I proceed? Okay, so then we have another principle, non-simultaneous encoding. This, again, within the framework of generalized probabilistic theories, was this, this principle was used in this recent derivation of quantum theory. So the scenario is such that the communicating parties do not share previous entanglement for the consideration of this principle. The transmitted system is a generalized bit. So the state is described by these generalized probabilistic theories. Again, the communicated information is classical. So this principle says that if a generalized bit perfectly encodes the value of a bit message, it cannot encode any further information about another bit message. So for example, if Alice has two bit messages and Bob tries to guess these messages, let's say Y corresponding to his guess of bit X and Y prime to X prime, then if Bob obtains this delta function, meaning that he can perfectly decode bit X, then the probabilities for his outcomes Y prime are the same for both values of X prime. So that's what the principle says, and it was used as a step in the derivation of quantum theory. It is interesting to notice that in some sense, this scenario is more general than information causality, because the transmitted system is a generalized system, but it is restricting because Alice and Bob do not share a previous entanglement. So then we have generalized superdense coding. This will be the second part of the talk. This is work in progress with Serge Massar and Stefano Pironio. Here, within the framework of generalized probabilistic theories, we investigate superdense coding. The shared resources correspond to a generalized entangled state. The transmitted system is a generalized system. And again, the communicated information is classical. Okay, so finally, to complete the motivation of this presentation, I present this open question that I find interesting to investigate. Within the framework of generalized probabilistic theories, can we find or investigate a generalized version of information causality, meaning that within this more general framework, if the communicating parties share an arbitrary entangled state within the theory, the transmitted system is a generalized system, and also the communicated information is a more general kind of information, what can we say about the communicated information that corresponds to this transmitted system? Okay, so that's also an open question that I find interesting. So now I proceed with the first part of the talk.
Is the question well defined, or is part of the question defining the question? I mean, when you talk about generalized information, do you have a definite?
No. That is part of the, yeah, or the question. What would generalized information mean? A possible approach to this concept would be defining mutual information that extends Shannon mutual information and quantum mutual information. That's again part of the question. So I proceed with the first part of the talk. This is a work I did during my PhD. The second part will be about superdense coding in general probabilistic theories, where in particular we define the concept of hyperdense coding. These are superdense coding protocols that are more powerful than the quantum superdense coding protocols in the sense that more information can be communicated. So here, first, I define precisely what quantum information causality states. I introduce a quantum task whose success probability is upper bounded by this principle. And I conclude with a brief discussion. So quantum information causality is a quantum version of information causality. We consider a three parties a scenario. This can be reduced to a two-party scenario, so we could go back to the scenario of information causality. But here we consider that these parties share an arbitrary quantum entangled state. Alice applies quantum operations, arbitrary quantum operations, and then sends a quantum system to Bob. The transmitted system is an arbitrary quantum system that can be arbitrarily entangled with the other systems. The only restriction on the transmitted system is on the dimension. So we say that it corresponds to m qubits. Then Bob applies arbitrary quantum operations on the received system and his previous system and obtains a system that we call V prime. So quantum information causality states that the maximum amount of quantum information that the transmitted m qubits can communicate is given by this. This bound. So the increase of the quantum mutual information between Charlie's and Bob's systems is upper bounded by 2 times the number of transmitted qubits. So we see that this is quite a general situation. The only restriction is on the dimension of the transmitted system, playing a role here in this bound. This bound can be achieved if the transmitted system is maximally entangled with Charlie systems. And so it cannot be achieved if the transmitted system is classical. So in particular, if the transmitted system corresponds to m classical bits, we would have a smaller upper bound with a factor of 1 here. This would basically be the information causality principle, because we can say that Alice and Charlie correspond to the same party, so we would be back in the information causality scenario. And we can say that part of the system is the data of n bits. Okay, so the proof for this is extremely simple. This is what we want to show. This follows from three properties of the von Neumann entropy, which are data processing, subadditivity, and the triangle inequality. The system B prime, the final system at Bob's location, is obtained by local operations on his system and the received system of m qubits. So from data processing, we have this inequality. Then just the definition for the quantum mutual information in terms of the von Neumann entropy. We apply subadditivity to the system Bt. Then the triangle inequality implies a bound on the von Neumann entropy for this tripartite system. This is the bound. So we have this. And then finally, because the transmitted system corresponds to m qubits, the entropy is upper bounded by m. So the proof is extremely simple. It is interesting to notice that if the transmitted system corresponds to m classical bits, the triangle inequality cannot be saturated. And so in this step, we would have a smaller upper bound where this term wouldn't appear. So this would reduce the factor here to 1. And that's the main difference in the proof of information causality to quantum information causality.
Is it a typo in the first line?
Pardon?
The first line, is it the second term should be I of C B? No, above.
Here?
No.
This is B prime. Bt.
But then does that follow from your first line rather than go through it?
Okay.
C, B, the second term of the first line.
Yeah. So what did I say here? This shouldn't be here, I think. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. Okay. So I now introduce this quantum task. This is a quantum version of the information causality game. Let's recall, in the information causality game, Alice has n input bits, and the referee asks Bob to reproduce one of the bits. Alice and Bob can play an arbitrary quantum strategy, sharing an arbitrary quantum entangled state. The only restriction is on the communication, so Alice would send Bob m bits, with m smaller than the number of input bits. Here, the inputs are qubits instead of bits. More precisely, the referee, Charlie, prepares singlets. For each singlet that he prepares, he keeps a qubit and sends the other one to Alice. And so Bob has to output a qubit that is in a ion state with the kth qubit at Charlie's location as close as possible to the singlet. And again, Alice and Bob can play an arbitrary quantum strategy, sharing an arbitrary quantum entangled state with the only restriction on the communication. So only Alice can communicate to Bob by sending a quantum system of m qubits with m smaller than the number of input qubits n. So the success probability is defined by this quantity, where omega k is the joint state between Charlie's and Bob's qubit. Okay, so an easy way to play this game is if Alice simply sends Bob m of the n input qubits without applying any operation on this. If Bob is asked to reproduce one of those qubits, he would give the right state. Otherwise, he would give a random state. So this is the success probability. And so for m smaller than n, this is smaller than 1, of course. We ask then whether Alice and Bob can perform better. For given m and n, can they achieve a higher success probability? Yes, they can. I have found strategies that include teleportation and superdense coding, together with a task with classical inputs. This task basically consists on the information causality task, in which the inputs are 2-bit numbers instead of bits. But I won't go into detail on these strategies. In general, what we have is that quantum information causality implies an upper bound on the success probability. This is the bound, p not greater than p prime, where p prime is the maximum solution of this equation. So for m smaller than n, p prime is smaller than 1. So this is perhaps the main physical insight of the application of the quantum information causality principle to this quantum task, that Bob is unable to perfectly reproduce Alice's kth qubit if Alice doesn't know the value of k, and her communication is limited to m qubits with m smaller than the number of input qubits. Now I present a sketch of the proof for this bound. First, we show that for any strategy in the QIC game that achieves success probability p, there exists a covariant strategy that achieves the same success probability. So covariant means that Bob's output qubit is unitarily rotated by some unitary u if Alice's input qubit is unitarily rotated by this unitary. So this is just a contraction of the Bloch sphere uniformly. This is the polarizing map. And so when we apply this to a qubit that is in the singlet state, in this case with Charlie's qubit, the output is a Wernher state. Yeah, so this step makes the rest of the proof quite easy. Another step is that from data processing and the fact that the input qubits, the qubits at Charlie's locations are in a product state, we obtain this bound. The main part of the proof, the main physical part of the proof is quantum information causality, which states an upper bound on the increase of the quantum mutual information. as a function of the number of transmitted qubits. Here we are using that the initially Bob's and Charlie's systems are uncorrelated by definition of the QIC game. So from these forms of the states, it is quite easy to compute these quantities because the local states are completely mixed. So we get a factor of 2 here. Then using this bound and this, we obtain this bound. Then we define the average state. And from the definition of the QIC, of the success probability in the QIC game, we have that this state can be written in this form. So then concavity of the von Neumann entropy implies this. And from this form of this state, the von Neumann entropy is just the Shannon entropy of a variable taking what value with probability p and the other three with this probability. So this is. So we get this bound. Then since the maximum success probability is between 1/4 and 1, in this range, this quantity is decreasing, so we get our bound. So with this, I complete the first part of the talk. The main purpose was just to present the ideas and the application to the QIC game. Just let me briefly summarize. We presented quantum information causality, which states the maximum amount of quantum information that a transmitted quantum system communicates fundamentally as a function of its dimension, independently of any amount of entanglement previously shared. This implies an upper bound on the success probability in the QIC game. And we saw that this implies that Bob cannot reproduce Alice's kth qubit perfectly if Alice doesn't know the value of k and she sends Bob m smaller than n qubits. As mentioned before, an interesting open problem is the investigation of a generalized version of quantum information causality in the framework of general probabilistic theories. So now I proceed with the second part. This is work in progress with Serge Massar and Stefano Pironio. We present superdense coding in general probabilistic theories and define the concept of hyperdense coding. Let me motivate this briefly. In quantum theory, the quantum superdense coding protocol considers that Alice and Bob share a maximally entangled state, let's say of 2 qubits. So Bob perfectly guesses Alice's message from a set of D square messages prepared randomly. And so we obtain this quantity. It is an interesting fact that for an arbitrary dimension of Bob's systems, arbitrarily big, we have this bound on the communicated information as a function only of the dimension of the transmitted system. This can be easily shown from the Smith decomposition of pure states, the fact that we can decompose any mixed state as a convex combination of pure states, and the fact that this quantity is convex. So we ask, why do we have this bound in quantum theory? I just gave some physical reasons within quantum theory, but we would like to address this question in the framework of general probabilistic theories. So this is the motivation for our work. we will present protocols, super dense coding protocols that violate this bound in the framework of general probabilistic theories. We call this hyperdense coding, and we ask what physical reasons, what physical conditions are these protocols violating that quantum theory satisfies. In that direction, we found a connection with the reversibility and tomographic locality. And I will discuss this later.
What is being transmitted here? Is D a bound on the dimension of what's transmitted, or a bound on what is D a bound on?
The transmitted system is a qubit.
A qubit.
Qubit.
Of dimension D.
Yep.
That's the bound. But there's some other thing. What is D prime?
D prime, we're saying that if Bob had a system with bigger dimension. We would still have this bound.
What does it mean? So you mentioned D on the left, that means Alice has only a system of dimension D, is that what it means?
Yes.
So it means that only dimension D is allowed to be entangled with anything that Bob has. Is that the significance?
Yes, we have an arbitrary entangled state with Alice's system being a qubit. And this can be arbitrarily big.
So D is about both on the entanglement and the dimension of the transmitted system?
Here the transmitted system is just Alice's system.
She sends the whole system?
Yeah.
Can we say that for any entangled state, D for one party, D prime for the other, any pure state is going to have a Schmidt rank at most D, which is the smaller of the two?
That's why we get this bound, yeah. Okay, so I will briefly introduce some notation and concepts of general probabilistic theories that include classical capacities, superdense coding, and hyperdense coding. As mentioned before, this is superdense coding that is more powerful than the quantum dense coding protocols. Pardon?
What's the difference between this, the information causality, and this last result that you just stated? They both have a factor of two in them.
You mean between this and information causality?
Yeah.
In information causality, the transmitted system is a set of bits, and
a classical.
Yes. So then I present.
So this one is a generalization of information causality one.
Here. No, what is the question?
Does this one imply information causality?
No. No, no. No, this is a different scenario. Okay, so I begin with a brief introduction to general probabilistic theories, just to set some notation and basic concepts. A general probabilistic theory defines a set of normalized states. So we use the notation in which the first entry for these vectors, for these states, is 1 for normalization. Then these vectors R are in some convex set. And we are considering a finite dimension for our states. So then the probabilities are linear functionals on this, on the states. So these correspond to what are called effects that are in the dual space of this vector space. Since we are in finite dimension, the dual space is basically the same, this vector space. And we impose that these effects, the normalized effects, give Euclidean inner products with the normalized states between 0 and 1, because we want the probabilities to be well-defined between 0 and 1. Then the unit effect is, with this notation, is given by this vector, with the first entry 1 for normalization and the other entry 0. A measurement is a set of effects that are normalized and add to the unit effect. They have to add to the unit effect so that the outcome probabilities add to 1. Okay, so with these definitions, the outcome probabilities are well defined as the Euclidean inner products between normalized effects and normalized states. And so this is the notation we are using. Then, briefly, for bipartite systems, we use this notation. We impose no signaling and tomographic locality, as usually done in general probabilistic theories. And from that, it is a known result that the bipartite state space and the bipartite space for defects are in this vector space. And we have that the state space is between the minimal and the maximal tensor product. From here, we are going to use that these states can be, these states and effects can be expressed as matrices with Na plus 1 rows and Nb plus 1 columns. That's the notation we are using. Then the minimal tensor product is defined as the convex hull of the product states, and this corresponds to the set of separable states. The maximal tensor product is defined in this way. All the states that are normalized by the by this the unit effect in the bipartite state space, and that give well-defined local measurements. So this is the biggest set of states that is consistent with no signaling and well-defined local measurements. Okay, states here that are not here are entangled. Okay.
What does it mean, local measurement consistent? What does that mean?
Yeah, it means that we have two systems, A and B, and so we apply a measurement on system A or system B.
Yeah. But what does it mean, the maximum set of states consistent with local measurement?
Consistent with a well-defined local measurements, meaning that...
What would be an example of a state that's not consistent with well-defined local measurements?
Negative.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Finally, about the dynamics, briefly, we consider that the minimal condition that should be imposed on the set of allowed transformations is the consistency condition. This is a condition well studied, and we just borrowed this from the work of Barrett. This condition says that the set of allowed transformations on system A is consistent if, for every transformation, the state space for system A remains invariant. And similarly, if we also apply the identity map on another system B, the bipartite state space remains invariant for any system B that we add to system A. This, in quantum theory, corresponds to complete positivity. We also have that it is another well-known result that, in general, the allowed transformations can be represented as linear maps. So we express these transformations as matrices with this rank. Okay. Now, classical capacities. This consider the situation in which Alice encodes messages by preparing states in this state space, and Bob applies measurements with effects in the corresponding set of normalized effects. So the classical capacity for this state space is the maximum of the classical mutual information between these random variables. We say that the classical capacities are super additive if the classical capacity for the bipartite state space is greater than the sum of the classical capacities for the local systems. Okay, so in quantum theory, there are examples of channels that have super additive capacities, super additive classical capacities. But here we are considering the fundamental classical capacities of the theories because we are optimizing over all possible channels on the given state space. So in the case of quantum theory, with that definition, we would have additivity of classical capacities, right? After optimizing over all possible channels, we have a qubit communicates 1 bit and 2 qubits communicate 2 bits. That's what we mean here. So we present examples of general probabilistic theories that have super additive classical capacities in this sense.
They're not sharing any entanglement or anything like that?
No. In this scenario, no. No, no. These systems could be entangled. Yeah, that's...
with each other.
Yeah.
But there's no pre-existing... between A and B.
No, no, no. Okay. In quantum theory, we have the concepts of dense coding and super dense coding treated as synonyms. But here I would like to distinguish them to emphasize the communication power of different dense coding protocols. So I'm going to use the term dense coding for protocols of this type in which Alice and Bob initially share some entangled state. Alice encodes messages by applying local operations on her system. Then she sends the system to Bob. Bob applies a joint measurement and tries to decode Alice's message. We say that the dense coding capacity of the initial state is the maximum of the classical mutual information between these two random variables. We use the concept, we use the term of super dense coding for particular type of dense coding protocols in which the dense coding capacity of the initial state is greater than the classical capacity of the transmitted system. So this means that if Alice and Bob, using these kind of protocols, are able to communicate more information than what they could communicate if Alice only sent her system without using any previously shared entanglement, then we call this super dense coding. We have super dense coding in quantum theory, and as I said before, there is a bound on the amount of information that can be communicated. Okay, so if this system corresponds to a qubit, here the classical capacity would be log base 2 of D. That's the bound we mentioned before. Now, we present the concept of hyperdense coding in general probabilistic theories. These are dense coding protocols that violate this bound. Okay, and I will present examples of these protocols. Okay, for that, I will present hypersphere theories. These are theories in which the local state space is an Euclidean ball. So the surface of the state space is a hypersphere. And this corresponds to the set of pure states, so that's why we use this name. The extremal effects are of this form. And these theories are physically motivated because the case n equal 1, dimension 1 here, corresponds to the classical bit. The case n equal 3 corresponds to the Bloch sphere. And so importantly, we have shown that for an arbitrary dimension, for these hypersphere theories, the classical capacity is 1 bit. And we are going to use this. So I present now these protocols. These hyperdense coding protocols are dense coding protocols in which the local systems are described by hypersphere theory systems of this dimension. So a power of 2 by after including this normalization term. We define the bipartite state space as the convex hull of the minimal tensor product and a discrete set of entangled states. So we are including all separable states and a discrete set of entangled states. These entangled states are matrices of this form. So these are diagonal matrices with entries being 1 or -1. According to the dot product in terms of these 2 n-bit strings. Okay, so it is not difficult to show that this state space is in the maximal tensor product. So by construction, we have that no signaling and tomographic locality are satisfied. The local transformations applied by Alice are matrices that are equal to these entangled state matrices. So these are orthogonal because these are diagonal with entries 1 or -1. And for n equal or greater than 2, these are also special orthogonal. This can be seen from this definition. This implies that the consistency condition is satisfied because the local state space remains invariant after these transformations. We can see that because the first entry of this diagonal matrix is 1, so this keeps this normalization term here fixed. The rest of the matrix is another orthogonal matrix that just rotates this vector. And when we apply this to an entangled state, we obtain another entangled state within the set here. So our bipartite state space remains invariant. Then Bob's measurement is defined by this set of 2 to the n effects. Which are normalized. So this is important because the outcome probabilities are well defined with values between 0 and 1. And these effects define a measurement because they add to the unit effect. So the outcome probabilities add to 1. So our protocols are well defined. And we obtain that Bob guesses Alice's message perfectly. Again, this can be seen from these definitions. Here, this dot product is just the Euclidean inner product of these diagonal vectors, of the diagonal vectors, because these are diagonal matrices. So, since Alice is preparing 2 to the n messages randomly, we achieve this communicated information. And so this is hyperdense coding for n greater than 2, because as said before, for arbitrary dimension n of these hypersphere theories, the classical capacities are 1 bit. So the communicated information is greater than 2 times the classical capacity of the transmitted system. So that is the definition of hyperdense coding. These hyperdense coding protocols imply super additive classical capacities because we can consider that Alice simply prepares these bipartite states, sends the bipartite system to Bob, Bob applies the same measurement, and so we obtain the same communicated information. So the communicated information is greater than the sum of the local classical capacities, each of 1 bit, for n greater than 2. Okay, so these are our protocols for hyperdense coding that imply super additive classical capacities. These are properties that do not arise in quantum theory. So we ask what physical reasons our protocols, what physical conditions our protocols violate that quantum theory satisfies. So we find a connection with reversibility and tomographic locality. By construction, our hyperdense coding protocols satisfy tomographic locality, but they violate reversibility. Reversibility says that for any pair of pure states, there is a transformation that connects one to the other, and this transformation is reversible. Our protocols violate this condition because our set of local pure states corresponds to a hypersphere, so this is a continuous set, but our defined allowed transformations are discrete, so there is no way in which any pair of pure states can be connected by an allowed transformation. So in particular, we violate this weak version of reversibility that we call local continuous reversibility. This says that for a bipartite system AB, any pair of pure states for the local system A or B is connected by a continuous reversible transformation. Okay, so our protocols violate this condition. It is interesting to mention that we have found examples of hyperdense coding protocols with hypersphere theories that satisfy local continuous reversibility, but they violate tomographic locality. The idea of these protocols is that we include arbitrary degrees of freedom that cannot be accessed locally, so they can be accessed only by joint measurements. And so this violates tomographic locality, but allows us to still satisfy local continuous reversibility. Okay, so we ask then, can we still have hyperdense coding with hypersphere theories that satisfy local continuous reversibility and tomographic locality? So in that direction, we have shown that for a bipartite state space that locally is described by hypersphere theory systems of the same dimension n that satisfy tomographic locality and local continuous reversibility, there is not hyperdense coding under a variety of technical conditions. An open problem is then to find out whether this holds for arbitrary hypersphere theories that satisfy local continuous reversibility and tomographic locality. Yes?
Was there something special about the dimension 2 to the n, 2 to the n minus 1? It was just convenient. Could you do the same for any large dimension?
Okay, it was for our protocols, it was convenient. So these are the examples we found. But here in this result, we are considering arbitrary dimension.
How much stuff do you have left in?
Sorry?
How much more do you have?
Ah, no, that's the last slide. Yeah, with this I conclude. I just say, let me present a brief summary. That's all. We introduce hyperdense coding. This is superdense coding that is more powerful than quantum superdense coding. We gave examples of hyperdense coding protocols with a pair of systems that are locally described by hypersphere theories. Our protocols violate local continuous reversibility or tomographic locality. An open problem then is to investigate under what general conditions we can have hyperdense coding and superdense coding in general probabilistic theories. We found that our hyperdense coding protocols imply super additive classical capacities. So another interesting open problem is to investigate this property with more detail in the framework of general probabilistic theories. And yeah, with that, I conclude. Thank you.
They look at what they call probabilistic teleportation, which is where you just consider the case where you succeed without making an adjustment to Bob's quantum system or generalized system in general case. And they show that there's a connection between the maximum probability of successfully teleporting and the size of your convex space, that they're the inverse of each other. So in standard quantum theory, the maximum successor probability is 1/4 in terms of quantum teleportation, and the qubit has convex spaces of size 4. And I wonder if there's some, because in some sense, dense coding is the dual of teleportation, they're very closely related. I wonder if there's any connection in what you're doing that tells you something about the size of the state space, the size of the convex space, which is your parameter n plus 1.
Yes, well, yeah, possible connection is with this result. I didn't specify what technical conditions we have, but we found, for example, that there is a distinction between dimension odd and dimension an even dimension. But these are just bounds, so we don't know how tight they are. So these are partial results, so I cannot say that we have found some result that is directly connected to the result you mentioned. Yeah. But yeah, the dimension here plays a role. And an interesting thing that we found is that for if we consider that one of the local systems is completely mixed, and we take n auth, and we say that the group of transformations, of local transformations, is SON, then we only have a then super dense coding is optimized by the block sphere. So for dimension n equal 3, we obtain that the communicated information can achieve the value of 2, but for other values of n, n auth, we cannot achieve that. So that's interesting, I think. But this is restricted because we are considering that the local systems are completely mixed. I would like to know if we consider arbitrary states, if we have something like that. Yeah, I don't know.
I think a while back that this, your special case of 2 to the n or 2 to the n minus 1, I think David Finkelstein worked a little bit on quantum theories like that. I don't know if you know that work, but I don't know how far they got. But it's possible that they have some useful results for you.
Who did you say? Sorry?
David Finkelstein.
Okay. I probably haven't.
They were thinking that in connection with spinners, I mean, a certain formalism and so on.
Yeah.
It looked a lot like this. I'm not 100% sure that it was identical to this, but it's probably worth looking it up and checking.
Yeah, thank you. I will look at that.
And another question. In your example, that same example was this hyperdense coding. You said that it violates this reversibility because the allowed transformations are discrete. Where did this discreteness come from? I mean, if you start with just the one system, it's just a sphere, so that's certainly not discrete. So how did the discreteness, it's from the bipartite system that it becomes discrete, or did you build in the discreteness? I just didn't understand what happened there.
Yes, we defined the allowed local transformations as a discrete set.
What does it mean you defined them? Didn't you have just a criterion for when a transformation was allowed and when it was not allowed?
Mm-hmm. No, well, I just said that our allowed transformations must satisfy the consistency condition. That is, the steady space must remain invariant. And we can exclude, if we want, we can exclude some transformations that would still be allowed, in this sense, would still be consistent, right? So I'm not saying that all transformations that satisfy the consistency condition are going to be allowed. I'm just saying that it is necessary. Well, that's what we use.
So you defined, you just by hand, you excluded some transformations, is that right?
Yes.
And how did that allow you to naively, I would have thought if you allowed more transformations, you can transmit more information. So how is it that excluding some is increasing the capacity? Mm-hmm. or seems to be increasing
mm-hmm.
in density.
Yes, if we include more transformations, then we have more restrictions on our state space, because our state space, our bipartite state space, must be such that it has to remain invariant under all transformations. So, yeah.
So you've increased, so what you've said is that for the bipartite system,
mm-hmm.
you've introduced so many states that you no longer, I mean, it's not that the number of transformations are reduced. So it's not that you reduce them by hand. I mean, you didn't look at transformations and say, I only allow these transformations. You said, I want these extra bipartite states, and therefore I cannot have these.
Yes.
Have so many transformations.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Yes. Yes, that was the approach we took. We said, well, we want to obtain, we want to define states and effects such that Bob can guess Alice's message perfectly.
So what if you had just taken these minimal tensor product states and something?
If we only take the minimal tensor product, this corresponds to only separable states.
Oh.
So then we cannot have super dense coding. Yeah, we don't have entanglement, so we cannot have super dense coding. Yeah.
So the whole thing hinges on some ambiguity in what is the set of states of a composite system.
Sorry, I didn't.
Well, in the sense that there's no principle in this whole framework that tells you, given two subsystems, what is the correct set of states for the composite system.
Yep.
It should contain this minimal tensor product, and it should be contained in this maximal tensor product.
Yes.
But you can choose anything in between.
Yes.
Is that
yes,
right?
Yes, yes.
And then if you choose a large enough subset, then you ruin, at least in your example, you ruin whatever you call it, reversibility. I forgot what you called it.
Just reversibility.
Just reversibility. But you allow for this hyperdense coding, is that it?
Yes. It's a bit, it's not clear how. How one can achieve more communication by including more states, because one could think, well, if I include all possible states, then I'm going to have more power of communication, right? It's an intuition.
Yes.
But the there are restrictions. If you include too many states, then you restrict your set of allowed transformations, because for each bipartite state, now you have that your transformations must take allow the states to allow the states.
Mm-hmm.
So you take a very big set of states, your transformations reduce, and so you cannot do more, many things. And similarly for the transformations. So there has to be some balance between these two quantities.
So how unique is the tensor product in ordinary quantum theory? I mean, suppose you took the state space of some n-dimensional, just quantum system.
Yes.
But you allowed this more general kind of product state, I mean, whatever, bipartite state. Would you get, is that consistent, first of all? And second of all, then would that also give hyperdense coding?
So is your question if we have two systems that are locally quantum? So we say we have two qubits.
Well, but let's not say qubits.
Because
you didn't. That's a qubit. Too special. Yeah.
We have two qubits.
Some high dimension. Yeah.
And then, but we take bipartite states that are more general than quantum.
Yeah.
Then your question is, in this situation, can we achieve superdense coding? Is that your question?
Yes.
Okay, so we gave examples of this. So for the case n equal 3, so for capital N being 2, small n is 3. In that case, this means we have the, locally we have the Bloch sphere.
Yeah.
This is exactly a qubit locally.
Yes.
But this bipartite state space is not the quantum. Right, because we are only taking here a discrete set of entangled states, so this cannot be quantum. But we are achieving a communicated information of 2. This is what is achieved by quantum.
Yeah.
This is superdense coding.
No, but I said hyperdense. Can you do better?
Hyperdense.
At least I thought I said that.
Mm-hmm. For hyperdense, yes, for hyperdense, here, well, I was not precise in what the result says exactly, but what we got is that for, in the particular case, n equal 3, we cannot achieve hyperdense coding.
Cannot.
If we impose tomographic locality and local continuous reversibility. So here we are including bipartite states that are more general than the quantum. And yeah, we don't achieve hyperdense coding, but for the more general case, I don't know. Yeah, only this is only for case of qubits. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.